Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, North Korea. The headlines these last days, North Korea is back to its provocations with missiles. I'll come to a summary on ABC News. North Korea launches fourth missile test in 2 weeks. North Korea fired two short-range ballistic missiles toward the East Sea Monday morning, its fourth test in less than a month. South Korea's military detected two projectiles believed to be short range. This is a quote from South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff. Launched into the East Sea to the northeast from the Sunan airfield in Pyongyang around 8:50 a.m. and 8:54 a.m. We welcome Bruce Bechtel, our guide of Angelo University, who has many years watched the provocations from North Korea. It does seem to be Groundhog Day. However, Bruce, a very good evening to you. For some time during the pandemic, the undistinguished dictator Kim Jong-un has been either silent or missing in action. He is now photographed again, looking slimmer. With reports of famine in his country, he's firing missiles. Do these events connect? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and good evening, Gordon. And I do think these events connect. As you said, we saw really kind of a thaw in North Korean military activity and all activity during our same time period that we were experiencing COVID here in the United States. And then along with that, we saw, as you call him, and as I agree, the undistinguished dictator Kim Jong-un had lost a lot of weight. Now, it's not clear if that was because of some COVID-related thing or if he was if he just went on, a diet of some sort, but he certainly has lost a lot of weight. He's been seen in a lot of pictures with the weight loss. Nevertheless, tied into that is also the fact that the military, largely because of COVID, one would think, has not engaged in a lot of activity, including their missile programs, which seem to have now picked up. This looks like three different systems now that they are testing within the past few weeks.
And the reports of famine, do they connect? Do those reports, are they accurate, and do they connect to these events?
Well, what we're getting so far is anecdotal information, so we don't have hard data to prove that there's been famine, but, something that would certainly indicate that is their supply chain was drastically cut, both maritime and the border with China, because of COVID. They basically shut the country off, and they are not a country capable of being self-supporting when it comes to foodstuffs for their own people. So it's likely that it's almost completely likely that there was at least some food shortages during the COVID crisis. I can't see how that could not happen. So those two are connected. It looks like those systems they probably got from Russia, and Russia doesn't give anything to anybody except Syria recently. So that means money that could have been spent on foodstuffs for their people was instead spent on cute new toys for Kim Jong-un, these new missile systems that we see.
Gordon, you have a question for Bruce.
Bruce, you talk about new missile systems. There are, North Korea has claimed, and people have agreed, that they've been testing hypersonic missiles and hypersonic glide vehicles. What do you know about that?
Well, a hypersonic missile means it can fly at five times the speed of sound. And it looks like, and again, the data is still sparse because, the test just occurred. It looks like at least twice they've been able to get these missiles to go faster than five times the speed of sound, including on one of those train-launched missile tests that they did very recently in the past few days. More importance to me is the accuracy of the missiles and their evadability from U.S. and South Korean ballistic missile defense, because that seems to be a characteristic of these missiles. Plus, they're able to hit pinpoint targets, which is something the North Koreans have not been able to do with missiles such as the Scud and the Nodong, et cetera, in the past. So this certainly exacerbates the potential threat that North Korea presents to U.S. and ROK forces during any potential conflict.
Bruce, what does he want for these missile tests? Does he expect a bargain?
I think he does. And what Kim Jong-un, I don't know if you, I'm sure you have, you're one of the most well-read people I know. If you've been looking at the press of what Kim wants, he wants a lot. And he's going to probably insist that in order for him to stop these short-range missile tests, that, you know, we give him an easing of sanctions. That's what the North Koreans are focused on, is the easing of sanctions. And no matter what anybody says, those sanctions have really hurt the Kim Jong-un regime, especially when it comes to foodstuffs and, you know, oil, because North Korea just doesn't have that stuff. They need it. They don't have a lot of money to buy it. And the fact that we're sanctioning them from letting the West sell them that stuff, or even supposedly Russia and China, has really hurt them, especially during the COVID crisis.
Gordon?
Bruce, the last couple days, there was a train that traveled from China into North Korea. People are talking about this as maybe a one-off, or maybe the general resumption of Chinese aid to North Korea. Where do you come down on this?
Well, in my personal opinion, there's no way that this is a one-off. As you know, the Chinese have been, quote-unquote, looking the other way as these illicit fuel shipments were coming out of their ports via, you know, maritime means. They shut off the oil pipeline. I would predict that that's probably going to start flowing again pretty soon. So, you know, China has never really gone along with the sanctions as they signed up to do. That includes Russia as well, you know, just by selling these missiles to North Korea. So I would predict that this is not a one-off. It's simply the beginning of what is now going to become a new routine between China and North Korea, which is resumption, obviously, of trade across the border.
Bruce, there's a presidential election in South Korea. There's reason to believe there'll be a change in direction from the present administration, which has been extremely accommodating to North Korea. Does that change North Korea's posture in any of these events?
Well, I think it will. I mean, as you know, and I know Gordon is very well read. In fact, he can be considered an expert on the elections coming up. The election is very close. So I would say if the conservative individual gets elected, we are likely to see a real sea change in policy toward North Korea, much less conciliatory, much more pragmatic and realistic, even, I would say. If that happens, North Korea is going to become much more within itself, even than it has. We saw that really more than we would have expected because of COVID. COVID is dying down now, obviously, but the North Koreans will probably push less for a deal with the new president than they would if they get the left of center individual who's running.
Gordon, your measure of South Korea, has the public in any fashion changed its opinion of North Korea during these peace gestures these last years?
John, I don't think that there's been substantial changes in the public attitudes in South Korea. Got to remember that although North Korea is very important to the U.S. and, of course, to South Korea, South Korean presidential elections are generally fought on domestic issues. And both the governing party and the so-called conservatives right now are very much arguing about domestic issues. They do talk a little bit about the U.S. They talk about China and obviously North Korea, but that's not dominating the campaign.
You have a question for Bruce, Gordon.
Bruce, if the so-called progressive candidate, Lee Jae-myung, wins, what happens to the U.S. alliance with South Korea?
Well, I think the South Koreans even the progressives, as you call them, I would call them the far left, which is what they really are. They want a good alliance with the United States, but their vision of the future with North Korea and even of the ROK-US alliance is based more on symbolism than it is on reality. In other words, the big OPCON transfer thing, you know, really nothing is going to change except the commander of ROK and ROC forces in wartime will be a ROC four-star instead of a U.S. four-star. The command structure stays the same. The same goes with North Korea. The South Korean progressives, they know that North Korea's behavior is unlikely to change, but they're hoping that by making all of these conciliatory moves, they can somehow bring change later. That was done during the Kim Dae-jung administration. It was done during the Nomu-yun administration, and now it's been done during the Moon administration, and it just doesn't work. So I think that what's going to likely happen is if another progressive is elective, we are still likely to see a move to more pragmatic policy, because what's been going on obviously just hasn't worked.
Bruce Bechtel, author of The Last Days of Kim Jong-il, professor at Angelo State University. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.